Mr. Al Michaels joins us here on the Fan. Al, Jody McDonald, Gary Myers here. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, Al. Thanks for coming on. You know, Jody, Al has that famous call from the Olympics. You believe in miracles, right? He has called multiple World Series, multiple Super Bowls, but Al will tell you, and he's going to back me up right now, the highlight of his career was the 10 years that we worked together when I was a consultant on ABC Monday Night Football. Right, Al?
Second only to when I did motorcycles on ice in Insel, West Germany in 1977.
Damn.
you're close, Gary.
See, and I was gonna go with you hit the pick five at Santa Anita.
Ah, now we're talking. Hey, listen, I had our Kong in the Breeders' Cup back in 1991 or two. He was the French import, and he came in and he paid like $269 with Jerry Bailey up. Go figure.
Oh, that should never happen.
Now you're talking Jody's language.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that. All right, before we get into football, cheesesteaks in the room, or are you going out for fine dining in Philly tonight?
He is taking us to a Lebanese restaurant, and I don't eat any vegetables. Gary knows that all too well. And I looked at, they have, you know, pictures of like the 37 dishes. So all I can tell you is we're going to have a production meeting with the Cowboys in about 2 hours. And hopefully I'm going to have a bunch of cold cuts and pretzel rolls and maybe take a little doggy bag. Because I don't see anything that I'm going to be able to eat tonight at the Lebanese place.
That's funny.
So, Al, I know you have a very good relationship with Jerry Jones. And I spent 5 hours with Jerry, you know, putting together my Cowboys book. Will you have an opportunity to have any private time with Jerry before kickoff tomorrow night?
Yeah, I mean, we always visit. I talk to him a lot. I'm sure I'm going to at least get on the horn with him tomorrow at some point. And, you know, it never lacks, as you know better than anybody, Gary, it never lacks for drama around the Dallas Cowboys. I can't tell you how many games I've done in the 33 years I've done, you know, the primetime game in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So probably close to 75 or 80. And I can't think of a single game when there wasn't something going on in addition to what was taking place on the field. And this is no exception.
Al, how do you explain, and here's a man, and I was there in Dallas when he bought the team, and I tell people he had to scrape together every last million to buy the team for $154 million, and now it's worth $5 billion. Obviously, he's a brilliant businessman, and that's why he's in the Hall of Fame. Why do you think, and if you agree with me on this, why do you think he's failed so miserably by not realizing that he needed to have a general manager all these years after Jimmy left?
Well, you know, look, they won the three Super Bowls, the third of which was, you know, Jimmy's players, but Barry Switzer coaching, obviously.
Right.
I think, and I'm not attributing the lack of success to bad luck. I think this team has lost as many or maybe more excruciating games than any team I can think of over the last 20 years. And again, that's not to say they would have won a Super Bowl, but they have had some excruciating losses along the way. You know, Jerry is not the worst GM in the league by any stretch of the imagination. He's made, you know, some bad moves. He's also made a lot of very good moves. You know, and I think he does listen to his people. I think there's a perception from people who don't know him that he is a lone wolf. He sits there by himself in the office. He makes every decision. I think he's collaborative. I know that he, you know, he talks to a lot of people. He loves input. He, of course, will make the final decision. But I'm not sure. You know, Gary, just to say they should have had another GM, that doesn't necessarily mean they would have had any more success. You and I both know, but Jody does too, there are a few good GMs, and there are a lot of very average GMs.
This is true.
And there are some that, you know, have made some terrible choices through the years. So I just think it's a combination of factors as to why, you know, the Cowboys haven't reached the pinnacle that they reached 25 years ago.
All right, Jerry may or may not answer this question if you put it to him tomorrow. So I'll ask you in advance and just get your speculation on it. Since Jimmy left, he's gone down every coaching road you can go down. The college coach in Switzer, the coordinator in Phillips and Garrett, the former winner Parcells to come in and bring in his gravitas and all that. And none of them have delivered, other than Switzer, who, as we said, inherited Jimmy's players. What trick does he have left up his sleeve as the next coach of the Cowboys?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, these days, funny. We know how it works in the NFL in terms of coaches. And, you know, you're assuming right now that he's going to make a change. And I would guess, you know, I would guess if the season continues to go up in flames the way it has to this point, then that's more likely than not. At the end of the season, I don't think anything will be done in midseason. You know, we're to the point now, it's a very interesting thing in the NFL. I see two things. I see, number one, you really need an offensive guy, an offensive head coach, unless you're going to bring in a defensive guy with a defensive pedigree, and he's able to bring, you know, an offensive guru with him. And I see going younger, there's no question about that. Remember 10 or 11 years ago, every owner in the league would basically say, where do I find the next Mike Tomlin? Mm-hmm. This was when Tomlin got the job. He was like 33, 34 years old, led him to a Super Bowl in the second year, and it became, you know, where do we find the next Mike Tomlin? Now it's becoming, where do I find the next Sean McVay? I mean, think of what, you know, the Rams did. You take a chance on something like that. I give Stan Kroenke and Kevin Demoff tremendous credit. They bring a 31-year-old guy in, and they're going to give him the reins. And part of the reason they did that, of course, it's the reverse of what I just talked about with an offensive coach and a defensive guru. They brought in the offensive coach, and then he said, I can bring you Wade Phillips. And when he knew, and Kroenke knew, that he could bring Wade Phillips in to run the defense, that sealed the deal. Otherwise, it probably wouldn't have gone that way. But I think every owner in the league who's going to make a switch now is going to look for that young, offensive-minded head coach.
Al, you have probably 17, 18, 19 meetings with coaches every year, depending on, you know, whether you have the Super Bowl or not. And I've lost count, maybe you haven't, how many times you've had the pregame meeting the day before with Bill Belichick. Take us into that room, if you will. Is he any different when there's no cameras, there's no tape recorders, there's no notepads? Is any different then? Is he any more forthcoming? Do you see any more personality out of him than you do in his press conferences or you know, during the week or after games? And certainly, do you see any more personality than you see from him on the sidelines?
I would say from time to time. I have had meetings where Bill's been in the meeting since I started in 86, and he was with the Giants under Parcells. So maybe 75 meetings through the years. He can be great company. He can be. There are times when maybe, I don't want to say he's distracted. He's never distracted. I mean, he's locked in mentally on everything. But there are times when he would rather be any place than in that meeting. And he has to do that meeting every week with every crew.
Right.
So it depends. There are times when he's been a pain, and there are times when he's been terrific. And we had a great meeting with him last week. He was in a good mood prior to the Green Bay game. Things seemed to be going very well, and that was borne out on the field that night. The one thing that Bill does love to talk about is a great respect for the history of the game. He'll tell you, you know, story upon story. He goes all the way back. He has a great respect for, you know, coaches from the past. Ted Marchibroda gave him his first job as an intern, paid him $25 a week with the then Baltimore Colts. Rick Forzano, who brought him to Detroit years ago. So I don't think I've met anybody who understands the history of the game more than Bill Belichick. But if you get him when he's in a pretty good mood and he wants to sit and he wants to kibitz, he's good company.
Al Michaels, NBC Sports lead announcer, Sunday Night Football, our guest here on The Fan. Al, I want to ask about the other team going to be on the field, going to be hosting tomorrow, and that's the Eagles against the Cowboys. Have gotten a 4-4. Redskins a game ahead. Other teams in the NFC certainly look better than the defending champs right now, but if they can win the division, get their puncher's chance come playoff time, where do you think the Eagles are at midseason?
Well, you know, Jody, the consensus is they're on the upswing. The graph is pointing up. I'd agree with that. They've had a weird year. You know, they beat Atlanta on opening night. They go to Tampa and lose. Come back, beat Indy. Go to Tennessee, lose in overtime. Lose to Minnesota, fell behind early. Then it looks like, you know, they're back on track. Beat the Giants in New York by 21. Then, I mean, of all things, they have that 17-point lead against Carolina and blow it. But they came back, and that was such an important game in London against Jacksonville. They win the game. They have a bye. They have a lot of injuries. I mean, last year you think about all the stuff that happened to them, and they still won the Super Bowl. you're asking them pretty much to do it twice, because they've got a lot of key guys that have been out and will be out. So tomorrow's usually important. And then, you know, they go to New Orleans next week. And you look at their schedule down the line here, I think two of their next four or five games are the Saints and the Rams, both on the road. That's tough. They get Houston at home toward the end of the season. They finish up at Washington. But, I mean, I see this team, right? They're very confident. They feel that they turned the corner, had the bye week, have gotten a little bit healthier, even though a lot of guys are still out and will be out. But it looks to be right now, and especially going in as a pretty heavy favorite against Dallas, a team that is ready to make its move.
Al, I want to ask you a different kind of question. You've worked with probably the two best analysts in NFL TV history, in John Madden and Chris Collinsworth, who I know very well from my HBO days. Other than the fact that Chris does not yell boom every time there's a big hit, what do they have in common, and what's different about working with each of them?
What they have in common, Gary, is they understand television. They're immersed in what television production is about. I have always felt that the best analysts are not guys who think of themselves as ex-jocks or ex-coaches. There are a lot of, you know, players, ex-coaches who come to the booth and go, hey, you know, I know what's happening out here. I can describe it all. I'll tell you about a three-technique tackle, even though nobody knows what a three-technique tackle is except the coach. You know, so Chris and I, we laugh about, if you're going to go to that jargon, explain it to people. It's not that hard. You're communicating. Both Madden and Collinsworth are great, great, great communicators. John was a tremendous coach. Chris could be, if he wanted to be, Chris could be a great head coach. So the similarities are there in terms of understanding what it is. I mean, it's not just putting a microphone on and barking into it and dispensing information. You know, Gary, it's a whole process, and there are 15 different moving parts going on. And each of those guys understood what everybody's job on the crew was, get their timing down so that, you know, the tape operators could get what they have available to them ready, understand how to, you know, go through the game, and there's a constant interaction between the producer and the announcers. You try to get in a whole bunch of information, but not too much information. They also understand what is relevant. If you wanted to sit there and spew statistics all night long, you could. Mm. Easy. But what we do is, and we've always been a part of a group that we say, hey, what's important? What is relevant? What is germane? They get the other stuff. The other stuff is just stuff. It's nonsense. It fades away into the ether. So, understand what this is about. Those two guys are, you know, fantastic. I don't have to tell you. I mean, I've been blessed. I mean, when I had Madden, I felt like I had Joe DiMaggio, and then John retired, and I got Mickey Mantle.
Where does Dennis Miller fit into that?
I just have to share one thing with Dennis. Dennis still loves football. He sends me a text toward the end of the game the other night. And, I mean, Chris had said something toward the end of the game about, you know, Josh McDaniels will get another head coaching opportunity. And I came in and I said to Chris, are you sure about that? I mean, after what took place in Indianapolis and hiring assistant coaches. So Miller sends me a text within 60 seconds. He says, way to go, Albino. I wouldn't trust McDaniels to hold my place in line at Epcot Center.
That sounds like a Dennis Miller line.
That's Dennis Miller. Unbelievable.
All right, Al, we just last week hit the midway point of the season, so I think it's a good time to ask this question. Call it a grade, call it a feel, put on a Collinsworth hat and be an analyst. What do you say of refereeing in the first half of the National Football League this year?
Started out very erratically. I think it's gotten better. I think what people were really worried about at the beginning of the season has subsided to a certain degree. You know, the helmet-to-helmet contact, the ejections, what is a sack? And obviously you had those back-to-back plays with Clay Matthews in the two Green Bay games earlier in the season. I think it has settled down a little bit. I think it's gotten less murky, maybe, is the way to put it. But you guys both know this is like a forest fire. You know, you think you put the thing out, and it will definitely rear its ugly head again. It just has to.
Doesn't have to, and I hope it doesn't, and I'm glad you said that, because when we have these questions, because I was the same as you, I was paranoid. Oh, my God, they're going to ruin football with this helmet rule, because I watched enough stupid preseason games. I thought they were in for an awful season, and the Clay Matthews stuff, there haven't been any issues the last 4 weeks, and we never say anything. When the refs get it right and they do the job, nobody says anything. But if they screw it up or we disagree or whatever, we're ready to burn them at the stake. So I just wanted to see if you gave the refs a little credit like I have been the last couple of weeks. I'm glad I'm on the same page with Al Michaels. Al, thank you very much for hopping on board. Pass on the Lebanese. I hope they got cheesesteaks in the coach's room for you tonight, big guy.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, Al.
Al Michaels here with us on The Fan.